Welcome to this podcast by The Rocks Church. We hope you find it challenging and inspiring. For more information, visit therocks.church.
Hey, we are in for a treat this evening because one of my good friends, Mark Palmery, who is the senior leader of a great church in Rivervale called Elevate Church, he's here among us. He's one of the best communicators in our city. So why don't we give Mark Palmery the best and the warmest The Rocks welcome.
Hey, good evening. Now, despite appearances to the contrary, I'm currently on holidays. Some time ago, I got a call from Daniel, and he says to me, hey, who's speaking at Elevate on the November 24? And I didn't need to check our schedule, because I had that date, November 24, engraved in my brain, because I'd counted up to November 24, because November 24 represented for me the end of a 23-week preaching streak at Elevate Church. And I was due, one of our team was jumping in this morning, due for a week off, a nice staycation at home, including a Sunday off, didn't have to prepare, didn't have to shave, didn't even have to change out of my pajamas if I didn't want to. But I'm a friend. And he says, so, you know, if you're not preaching at Elevate, how about you come speak at The Rocks? And I'm like, it was about as appealing as walking out of the all-you-can-eat buffet at Sizzler, having gone on a carb binge and walking past the sausage sizzle at Bunnings. No amount of extra onions was going to make that option appealing. So I'm like, November 24, preach at The Rocks. But I remember the last time that I was here and I started to do the math in my brain. Okay, last time I spoke at The Rocks, they had one service. It was 10 a.m. So I figured I can still probably have a sleep in, roll out of bed at the crack of 9, get ready, be here for 10, do the preaching thing, shake a few hands, kiss a few babies, get out of here, probably be back home on the end of the tongs in front of my grill by midday. So I figure, hey, I'm in. And then Daniel says to me, cool, fantastic. And just so you know, that you can preach the same message in all three services. And I said, wait, what? So here I am, still. Yeah, I couldn't think of a better place to spend my holiday. That is the most disingenuous thing I'm gonna say to you all night, but let's just get that out of the way. And that's not about you, that's about me. Hey, a few years ago, my wife and I were running and hosting a conference for church leaders from around the Asia Pacific region, and we'd pinpointed a beautiful place to have that, Queenstown, New Zealand. We figure, you know, just up the kind of zzz, the lure, pick a beautiful place. If you haven't been to Queenstown, New Zealand, let me tell you, it's worth putting on your bucket list. It's one of the places in the world that no matter how good people tell you it is, no matter how many Instagram photos you see that are spectacular, it's even better when you get there. There's no chance for you that Queenstown will overpromise and underdeliver. And so, I knew that because a year before we hosted the conference there, I'd gone there, do a little bit of investigative research, and I'm like, man, yeah, this is the place. And I got home to Louisa and I'm like, sweetheart, it's got to be Queenstown. We'll have the conference there. And I start telling her all about it. Queenstown, it's this kind of resort, summer resort in front of a lake, winter resort at the foot of snow-capped mountains. It's built up on the little side. You overlook this pristine freshwater lake. On the other side of this pristine freshwater lake is the mountain range, the Remarkables, and it's snow-capped. And it's like a postcard, and just about every a piece of accommodation in the whole of Queenstown has views over the lake and views to the mountain. And you can get, at the end of the conference, working hard through the day hosting this thing, we can go back to our little accommodation and sit on the balcony, pour an adult beverage and take in the views and say, how's the serenity? And she's like, oh, this sounds incredible. I can't wait. So we get there. We go into the lobby of the place we're staying. We're hosting the conference. Hi, Mark and Louisa, we're hosting the conference. Here to check in. And the check-in person says to us, okay, welcome. Something we need to let you know, that with the conference, all of our accommodation is fully booked. But we did manage, we knew, because you're organizing it, you'd probably be happy to put yourself kind of at the bottom of the pecking order. We have been able to find you accommodation, but unfortunately, yours is the only room in our resort that doesn't have a view of the lake and the mountains. It does have a view, but it's of the villa next door. And I looked across at Louisa, I watched the color drain from her face, and I realized in that moment that there had been a significant withdrawal from our marriage bank. And I knew in that moment that, now, here's what the check-in person was saying. Hey, Mark and Louisa, congratulations. Your conference that you've organized is so popular that it's fully booked out our resort. But what Louisa heard is everybody attending this conference gets a room with a view except for Mark and Louisa. Sometimes it's not good to be the exception. When everyone else is getting the good stuff and you're getting downgraded, because nobody likes to get downgraded, and nobody likes to get downgraded, especially when the promise has already been put in front of you. And you've built up your hopes and your expectations and pictured things in your mind's eye. Man, when I get there, this is what I'm going to do. But when you get there, you don't get allowed to do that. So I want to take us on a little journey this evening, looking at a group of people who had an incredible promise made to them by God. And yet, despite God having made the promise, not everybody stepped into that promise. So, brains on, let's jump in the Wayback Machine. And I want to take you back a few thousand years. A few thousand years ago, God chose the people of Israel to be His people, His chosen people. The problem for them was, at one point in history, they got captured by the Egyptians and they got brought over to be put to work as slave labor, building things like the pyramids. So the next time you watch Getaway and they say, oh, these pyramids were built by the pharaohs. No, they weren't. They were built by the Israelites. Commissioned by the pharaoh, but built by the slaves. And the Israelites lived as slaves in captivity in Egypt for 400 years. And things weren't looking like they were ever going to change until God spoke to the big boss of the Israelites, the leader, and you probably even heard the name, even if you're not a church person. His name was Moses. God spoke to Moses, and now God actually said to Moses that in the near future, I'm going to orchestrate it so that you and the people are going to be released from Egypt, and not just released from something, but actually sent into something. Into a land that's flowing with milk and honey. Now, if you've been living in captivity for 400 years, just being released sounds like an upgrade. But not only did God promise an upgrade of freedom, He promised them an upgrade that you're gonna move from a slave labor camp into a land flowing with milk and honey. And this eventually happened. They eventually got free from Pharaoh, started to make their way. But before they got released, Moses did a little, well, it looks like a pro move, but really it's a bit of a rookie move. Is he actually got 12 people. Israel was made up of 12 tribes and he chose one person from each tribe. And before they set out on this journey, Moses got the 12 guys and he said, look, God's promised us this land. None of us have ever seen it. None of us have ever been there. He said it's flowing with milk and honey. That's really good. But I want you guys to go and check it out first and come back and let me know what you saw. So off they went, back they came. All 12 of them fronted up to Moses, and all 12 of them said to Moses, I'm gonna give you an honest and accurate report. And so all 12 of them said to Moses, yep, that land sure is flowing with milk and honey. So Moses is like, check. Then all 12 of them said, and this is something that God conveniently left off the travel brochure, that the land was populated by giants. And Moses is like, huh, all right, well, that's breaking news. Still. But here's what happened. At that point, 10 of the 12 versus 2 of the 12 actually started to diverge in their what they said to Moses. 10 of them had said, milk and honey, giants, therefore we can't possibly get in there. And yet, there was another two chaps named Joshua and Caleb. And Joshua and Caleb, and what was described of Joshua and Caleb is they had a different spirit. And what they said to Moses is, yes, we also saw the milk and honey, and yes, we also saw the giants, and here's the thing, we can surely move in to that land. Yeah. 10 of them said, milk and honey, giants, can't be done. 2 of them said, milk and honey, giants, game on. Yeah. And the thing that differentiated the two of them, that they were all bringing an honest and accurate report, was that Joshua and Caleb had a different spirit. And because they had a different spirit, they looked at things with a different perspective. And when you look at things with a different perspective, you get to find yourself drawing a different conclusion. They didn't have what a certain political leader calls alternate facts. They had a different spirit. Now, off they set off on that journey, 400 years of slavery, setting sail for the promised land. Within a very short time, the whole nation of Israel became what us Aussies like to call a bunch of whingers. And God didn't like that very much, any more than any of us do when we have to listen to it. And so God spoke to Moses and Aaron, how long is this gonna go on, all this grumbling against me by this evil infested community? I've had my fill of complaints from these grumbling Israelites. Tell them, as I live, God's decree, here's what I'm gonna do. Your corpses are going to litter the wilderness, every one of you, 20 years and older, who was counted in the census, this whole generation of grumblers and grousers and whingers. Not one of you will enter the land and make your home there. The firmly and solemnly promised land, except for Caleb and Joshua. And you can read this at face value and think, this sounds like a contradiction. God is saying, in the one breath, I promised you this, and in the same breath, but you're not gonna get it, except for Joshua and Caleb. And in that moment, I'm thinking, if I'm gonna insert myself into this story, I'm hoping I'm Joshua or Caleb. Because everyone else is about to get killed and never step into the promise. These guys are gonna get the upgrade. And we all like a good upgrade. I remember my first flying upgrade. I was in Orlando for work, not to meet Mickey, and the flight from, or the trip back to Perth from Orlando is Orlando, LA, LA, Sydney, Sydney, Perth, and the whole commute is a 36-hour commute. And I was sort of geared up for that. I bought the economy ticket, but I'm geared up for it. You know, I'm not 7'3", so I'm like, all right, I can probably make this work, and you know. And so I'm sitting in the departure lounge waiting for the boarding call like everyone else. And here's the thing about traveling domestically in the US. The carriers, it's so competitive that if their flights are fully booked, they still take more bookings. Because they don't want you to kind of say, oh, you're booked. Oh, I better go and buy my ticket from the competitors. They're like, no, we've got this. And the way they've got this isn't that they just sort of shove more people in like stuffing a sausage when the doors open. What they do is before the doors open, they put out a call. Listen, everybody, passengers, for flight number, blah, blah, blah. The flight is overbooked. And so what we need is a few people who are willing to take the next flight. And if you take the next flight, we'll give you a $200 voucher redeemable with our airline in the near future. And I'm like, well, that's not an option for me, because I got connecting flights and connecting flights and connecting flights. I'm sitting there, so I just ignore any of that. And then I hear this. Mark Pomery, would passenger Mark Pomery please come to the desk? And I'm like, oh. Really? So I schlep over to the desk. And I look at them. Now you look at them, you gotta be friendly. If in the US, if in the airports you're not friendly, you don't get to leave the country. I'm like, yes, I'm Mark Pomery. And they said, Mr. Pomery, we just need to advise you that our flights are overbooked. And I'm like, uh-huh. And because of that, we can't fit you into the economy section. And I'm like, uh-huh. She said, so we're going to upgrade you to first class. Would that be okay? A question that I have since filed into the category of stupidest questions ever, because I said, yeah, that will be just fine, thank you. And so this is what I did next. I walked back to my seat in the boarding pass. Now, I had done nothing to deserve that upgrade, but I'm like, come on, who's the man now? So I sit down, waiting for them to call the passengers. And, just the usual stuff. Over the intercom comes the call. Flight number to LA is currently boarding. We have two gates. We have the business class gate, business class passengers. Would you form a line in front of the business class gate? And economy passengers, would you please form a line in front of the economy door? But that's not what I heard. What I heard was, business class passengers, would you please line up in front of the business class gate? And every one of you that paid for an economy ticket, would you line up in front of the peasant door? Everyone that is, except for Mark Pomery. Except for Joshua and Caleb. But what's the deal with all the whinging? I mean, they lived as slaves for 400 years and now they're finally free. And not free to just kind of step out of the slavery and just kind of sit in the desert, but actually make their way to a land that God had promised them. That wasn't just better than slavery, but it was better than anything. Right. Yeah. So what's with the whinging? And I'm like, now, I have one of my former personal assistants. She resigned from working for me and went and trained and got a job as a prison guard in a maximum security prison, which I constantly ask myself the question, what was it about working for me that you thought it was gonna be better, life was gonna be better working with murderers every single day? But anyway, and I asked her, so, well, give me a little inside look to a day in the life, or like what's it like in prison there? And she said, you know, the thread, the single most important thread to understand about life for prisoners inside a maximum security prison is actually they are forced to live like children. Yes. That the time that they get up is decided for them. Right. The time they go to bed is decided for them. When they eat is decided for them. What they eat is decided for them. How much they eat is decided for them. When they can exercise, when they can read, when they can shower, all of the decision making is removed from them. Right. And that therefore simply defaults them to living and thinking like children. And then what we do in society, and she wasn't being critical, but she just said, this is just how it plays out. Then we eject them when they've served their time back into society, and we expect them to automatically start acting like adults when for the whole time they were incarcerated, they lived like children. Right. Well, here we have a group of people. They were incarcerated in Egypt for 400 years. So it wasn't just that some of the kids hadn't ever experienced freedom. This was generation after generation after generation. Nobody even talked about freedom. Yeah. This was the great, 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 great grandparents. They were free, but every generation since lived like children. Right. But then they got released into freedom. And here's the thing about freedom. Freedom requires you to grow up.
Right, so good, yeah.
But growing up, growing old is a decision that's made for you, but growing up is your choice.
Right.
And too many people grow old, but never grow up.
Right.
And instead of growing up, they wanted to go back.
Right.
What? Yeah, it was easier for them to want to go back to the familiar, the comfortable, the safe, take no risks, face no dangers, experience no fear, instead of being required to grow up. And I meet people, and I'm not saying this to be judgy, and I'm not better than anybody, but I meet people, and I've been a professional Christian for 25 years. I meet people who made a decision to say Jesus, because Jesus asks us two big questions. Who do you say I am? And the correct answer, by the way, just in case you're wondering, is that I believe you are Jesus Christ, the Son of God, and I would be happy to make you my Lord. And he's like, good answer. Now you're in. But then he asks a second question, now come follow me. And those are two different questions. And you can answer the, I believe you're the Son of God, without, I will follow you. And unless you're willing to follow Jesus, which by the way is an everyday decision, it's not a one-off. So alarm goes off, following Jesus today. It's in the following that we experience the growth. It's in the following that we experience the maturing. And if we're not willing to follow, we will literally get stuck in a time warp. Yeah. And that's why you meet people and you know people that they've been a Christian for maybe a decade, maybe two decades, maybe three decades, but there hasn't been much growth. Because growth is a choice. Right. And so if you've been a Christian for a period of time and Jesus rolls in on you and says, oh, good to see you. Wow, you haven't changed a bit. That's not a compliment. Right. Now, fast forward. The Winges, plus Joshua and Caleb, they got near the promised land. By this stage, Moses and all the other oldies, just like God said was going to happen, had all died off. Joshua had taken over as the leader from Moses, and they got near the promised land. Whoever was left from each of the 12 tribes got near the promised land, and Joshua started handing out parcels of land for them to settle in. One for this tribe, one for this tribe, boom, 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 go through them all. And but he hadn't got to Caleb and Caleb's tribe yet. And what had happened in that moment is that the other tribes chose to settle in the land that Joshua had given them, but it wasn't the land that God had promised them. And we can make that same mistake if we're not careful. It's good enough. It's close enough. But that's not the declaration, because we've been given a promise, and close enough isn't stepping into that promise. Stepping into the promise is stepping into the promise. Did you hear that one? That's why they pay me the big bucks. Stepping into the promise is stepping into the promise. And the whole crowd faints in amazement. So Caleb's tribe hasn't got their allocation yet. And remember, Caleb's someone with a different spirit. And he rolls up on Joshua, and this is what he says to Joshua. Oi. You'll remember what God said to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me back in Kadesh Barnea. And I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of God, sent me from there to spy out the land. And I brought back an honest and accurate report. My companions who went with me discouraged the people, but I stuck to my guns, totally with God, my God. And that was the day Moses solemnly promised, the land on which your feet have walked will be your inheritance, and you and your children's forever. Yes, you have lived totally for God. Joshua says, now look at me. God has kept me alive as he promised. It's now 45 years since God spoke his word to Moses. Years in which Israel have wandered around in the wilderness. But here I am today, 85 years old. I'm as strong as I was the day Moses sent me out. And I'm as strong as ever in battle, whether coming or going. So give me this hill country that God promised me. You yourself heard the report that the giants were there with their great fortress cities. But if God goes with me, I'll drive them out just as God said. Where they were and where Joshua had handed out the land to the others, that wasn't the land that God promised. That wasn't the land that they'd spied out. The land that they'd spied out that was flowing with milk and honey, yes, and some giants, was up there on the hill. And right now, Caleb's up in Joshua's grill saying, that's the land we want. So send me up there, us up there, and with God on our side, we're going to take that. So listen, in the few minutes we've got left, let me just take you on a flyover of looking at Caleb's life, a pretty significant slice of his life, of what it looked like in practice for him to live as someone with a different spirit, with the goal of stepping into the promise. He said to Joshua, my companions who went with me discouraged the people, but I stuck to my guns, totally with God, my God. I characterize that as faith, and I haven't got time to go into what faith is, and that's a whole message or message series in and of itself. But let me tell you what faith isn't. Because there's ditches on both sides of the road when people come to faith. Big idea, faith is not denial. Faith is not pretending there aren't challenges out there. Faith is not ignoring that there are circumstances in your life that are less than what God promised you. Yeah. But the ditch on one side of the road is you could think, well, with faith, I'm not going to worry about the challenges. I'm just going to focus on the milk and honey. You're all about the milk and honey. Well, here's the thing. If you only look at the milk and honey, you're going to get crushed by giants. The ditch on the other side of the road is to only look at the giants and forget about the milk and honey. And if you're only looking at the giants, you're going to find yourself too paralyzed to do anything, to step anywhere. So right there in the middle of the road that God would want us to walk on to step into the promise is to acknowledge that there's milk and honey. Sounds good. Acknowledge that there's giants. Okay. Doesn't sound so good. And acknowledge that God has promised you that land and promised to be with you as you venture towards and into that land. That's where our faith and where Caleb's faith came into play. And then he carried on to Joshua. Now look at me. God has kept me alive as he promised. It's now 45 years since God spoke this word to Moses. 45 years that I could have quit. 45 years that I could have settled. 45 years that I could have gone back. 45 years that I could have died or been killed or just been left in the desert. The years in which Israel wandered in the wilderness. However, I'm here today, 85 years old, and I'm as strong as I was the day Moses sent me out. I'm as strong as ever in battle, whether coming or going. I characterize this as faithfulness. Now, back in January, myself and my wife, we went with her family, the extended family. We booked a house in Dunsborough, Airbnb, and we all trundled down there. And one of the inhabitants that we took with us was our four-year-old nephew, Isaac. And he's a good kid, and we got on pretty well. The last night of our time there in Dunsbury, we went out to this restaurant, and I chose the restaurant. And I thought I would pull a couple of cool Uncle Mark moves, and I would choose a restaurant that little Isaac would like. And it's kind of like not just the menu, but the venue. And okay, cool. And I chose this restaurant that we could sit outside because it's summer, it's Dunsborough, beautiful. And just alongside our tables is a big, big grassed area where little Isaac can run around. Uncle Mark and Isaac can play some soccer. And so we got there, got to the restaurant. Our table wasn't ready yet. So Uncle Mark and little Isaac went to the little green space, little bit of soccer, playing soccer. Table came available. Pause on the soccer, go and sit at the table. Little Isaac likes chips. When we go out to dinner, it's just chips. Give me chips. No greens, no protein. He's all about the chips. So we know that. We don't even ask anymore. The waitress comes over, sits us down, says, would you like the menus? Yes, like the menus. I said, but for the little fella, can you just bring him a serve of chips? And so off she goes. Chips don't take long to cook, flash fry, whatever I get, I don't know. And she comes back, here's the chips. Then she says to the grown-ups, have you all decided what you're going to eat? And we go around, place our order. Off she goes. By the time she's walking away, Isaac's already vacuumed up all of his chips. And he's sitting there and, you know, our food's now being prepped in the kitchen. And we're sitting talking, this and that. And he says to me, Uncle Mark, can we go play soccer? And I said, oh, sure, buddy. Absolutely, we can go and play soccer. But before we do, the lady's going to bring us some food, some adult meals, and I'm going to have my meal, and then we can play soccer. Okay. And sure enough, the server came out and gave us all our meals, and I started into mine. And I was probably about 2 minutes in. I heard all of a sudden, "You're taking too long!" And I'm like, "What?" And I look across the table, and my four-year-old nephew's giving me the stink eye. And he's just finished screaming at me, "You're taking too long." And I said to him, "Listen, Isaac, I promised you I'd play soccer with you, and I haven't changed my mind. But I just need you to wait a little bit longer. And when I'm finished eating my meal, we'll go and play some soccer." So I keep eating. Probably about another 2 minutes go by. "You're taking too long!" And I'm like, "Listen, kid, I promised you that I would play soccer with you. And I haven't changed my mind. My promise still stands. Great is my faithfulness." And he said, "Faithfulness? What's that? I can't even spell my own name yet." "It means I need you to wait a little bit longer. But don't interpret the waiting as me having changed my mind and rescinded on the promise that I've given you." Yeah. Now, yelling, "You're taking too long," at your uncle is perfectly acceptable behavior when you're four. But if he's still doing that to me when he's 18, we're going to have a very different conversation than whether he needs to bone up on his soccer skills or not. If he's still yelling at me like that when he's 18, it's a pretty sure sign to me that he hasn't grown up. But we do this to God. We pray to him, and then we wait, and then some of us start screaming at him, "You're taking too long!" And then when we get sick of waiting, we tell somebody, "Oh, God didn't answer my prayer." And I've heard people say that to me a lot. "God didn't answer my prayer." And I say, "Really?" I said, "Because I love you, I'm going to tell you actually what really happened. You're saying to me, 'God didn't answer your prayer,' but what you really mean is God didn't give you what you asked for. And you've interpreted that as God didn't answer your prayer. But here's the thing you need to understand. God always answers prayer. Sometimes he says yes. Sometimes he says no. And sometimes he says, 'Not yet. I need you to wait a little.'" All right? And here's what's amazing to me, that a lot of people prefer a no to a not yet. Because at least you know where you stand in a no. At least there's some closure. At least you know, well, it was worth a try. Now I can move on. Because often when God says not yet, he doesn't say, "But in 3 minutes." He just says, "Not yet." But he says this, "Because I'm faithful, you can trust me, and you can be faithful." When I read the Bible, and this is a little pro tip here, one of the best things you can do, because the Bible's like, it's not just the good book, it's a good book. And you can insert yourself into some of these stories. And so I'm sort of picturing myself, Joshua has been handed down the 11 tribes. You can have this bit of land, this bit of land, this bit of land. Caleb's guys are like, whoa, when's it our turn? When's it our turn? Hey, Caleb. Get to the end of him. Hey, Caleb, Joshua saved us. This might be one of those, he saved the best for last. But the problem here is that all of the land down here, he's already given it all away. So where's our land? Where's this land that God's promised? And I picture Caleb looking at them going, "Guys, man, I'm so glad you asked. Check this. Have a look up there. See that up there? Up the hilltop country? The one with the views? That's the land." And they're like, Oh, yeah. Whoa. That looks like fortified cities. Yeah. No, it's fortified cities. They're the best fortified cities. That's the land that God's promised us. Those look suspiciously like giants to us. And he's like, yeah, giants, no problem. There's the best land up there and nobody else wants it. So how about we go and get it? So Caleb, the one with the different spirit, instead of settling for near enough, good enough, close enough, he's up in Joshua's grill and says to him, give me this hill country that God promised me. You yourself heard the report that the giants were there with their fortress cities, but if God goes with us, we'll drive them out just as God said. And Joshua blessed him. But here's the thing, final thought. Joshua blessed him, but Joshua didn't bless him with the land. Joshua blessed him with the opportunity to fight for the land because they're the only ones that were prepared to do that. And this is one of the things that often gets left off the Follow Jesus brochure because too many people start handing out the Follow Jesus brochure. Follow Jesus, step into the promises, live happily ever after, and leave off the bit about the fights. Leave off the bit about sometimes it's going to get rough. Sometimes it's going to get brutal. Sometimes it's going to be stuff that causes you to have to stand up and fight. But guess what? The fight is worth it because on the far side of the fight that God goes in with you is a promise that only the people that are prepared to go in and fight will ever step into. It's one thing for God to promise it to us, but that doesn't automatically ensure we're going to take a hold of it. It requires us to demonstrate faith, faithfulness, and a willingness to fight.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. For more great resources and to keep yourself up to date, head to our website. Visit therocks.church.